Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharsky, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Gentry Estes from the Tennessean, live from Omaha. Gentry, good morning. How are we doing?
Hey, good morning. Good to be with you guys.
Good to have you with us.
Hey, we've talked a little bit about the logistics of covering this thing before. Conceivably, 10 days in the middle of nowhere, with the team you're covering spaced out pretty well with rest between games, particularly if it's winning. Tell us a little bit about those logistics. And you've stayed, I think, both right in the middle of Omaha and maybe like an hour out of town. Which route did you go this time?
Okay, yeah, I'm in Lincoln. I prefer that as the way, and actually, PK, it's about 12 days. If you get a team that makes a run all the way to a three-game championship series, you're looking at 12 days up here. And, yeah, it's a while. That's the biggest reason. I have stayed in Omaha before, but, yeah, I like staying out in Lincoln. It's a little bit quieter. The rates are a lot better, and you get a nicer place with laundry and things where you can go to the grocery store and settle in. I can't think of too many other things I cover where I'm getting groceries and, you know, doing dishes in the room, but that's the case here.
What how difficult? I don't know about difficult, but you get regular availability with them every day. Like you get to know the team in a different way when you're with them for conceivably 12 days, even though you've covered them well up to the World Series?
Yeah, the big thing with this, and it's the same thing for the NCAA basketball championships, where you get like locker room access after games, you get to go behind the scenes. The NCAA at their championship events does do a pretty good job of giving more access than what we're used to covering colleges. Most of the time, it is difficult, really difficult, to really get to know a team when you're bringing out one or two players and putting them in front of all the media for about 5 minutes, and that's it. But this is a lot more of a behind-the-scenes kind of thing. And look, this is a really well-done event. They do a good job with the College World Series in Omaha. I know the it's not always fun to be away from home for 2 weeks and do the whole experience here, but it is one of my favorite events to cover when you're there. I always, Omaha takes a lot of pride in this thing, and they do a good job.
So, Gentry, obviously Tennessee waiting on the winner of Florida State, North Carolina. That will be later today, and then they'll try to punch their ticket to the College World Series final tomorrow. You know, the Florida State game, just an incredible comeback by them. Christian Moore hitting for the cycle in that one. Drew Beam with an outstanding pitching performance against North Carolina. You know, Tennessee, obviously, they're the number one overall seed, so they're expected to make noise. But what's kind of stood out to you, particularly in the Florida State game, Gentry, about just the continued persistence of this team, no matter how much they're down, to never give up with that lineup? They're never out of a game.
Yeah, and I think when you watch that Florida State game, that was kind of the perfect example of how things could go wrong for Tennessee here for a lot of that game. You know, the whole setup of that Friday starter role where it becomes Chris Stamos for barely an inning, and then you go to A.J. Causey. They've just kind of pieced this together all season without a true rotation. So when you do that in the first game, you know, Stamos is pulled after like three pitches or something, you know, he barely thrown. Then A.J. Causey comes in and gets hit hard, and they fall way behind. And that. If you'd said coming in, if you'd drawn up the worst possible start, it would have been to go that way. But, you know, we've known Tennessee's pitching was shaky, but we've also known the hitting is as good as any in the country. And, you know, you're sitting there at 9-4, not really thinking they're out of the game, and they weren't until the very end. And you know, we're kind of answering the question here, can great hitting overcome shaky pitching? And it certainly did in that game, but I think it was really important for Tennessee in that second game to get the start they did out of Drew Beam. That was huge for him to pitch as well as he did against a good lineup for North Carolina. And, you know, he was able to get deep into that game. The defense got a lot better. It was just much better baseball from Tennessee in that second game, as opposed to the first one where they got a little fortunate in that one.
So obviously, you know, the 2-0 route, and there was a stat that I think somebody put out there the other day. I think it was Ben McKee, that 27 of the last 33 winners have gone the 2-0 route here. So obviously Tennessee's in great position here. How do you view kind of how well positioned they are, both from their standpoint, but also the winner of Florida State, North Carolina, and the fact that, number one, they'd have to beat Tennessee two times in a row, but number two, they'd also have to do it while having played 3 days in a row at that point.
Yeah, and I mean, it is obviously a huge advantage. It's not impossible for a team to do it that way. I mean, LSU did it last year, but I feel like if you're Tennessee and you can get through this game tomorrow and just, you know, sneak into that championship series on Saturday with an extra 2 days of rest, and I mean, it's they're in an ideal scenario right now, and you know, it's this tournament. Few things are ideal. If you're able to get set up like that, I can't envision a better scenario in which Tennessee could go win a national championship. And I think the field in itself, I mean, you know, right now I'd say that the two best teams here are the ones that are 2-0. I think Tennessee and Texas A&M, those were the two favorites pretty, you know, by a pretty wide margin coming into this thing, and they played that way. But A&M's pretty banged up, and you just look at these teams and there's nobody there that should scare Tennessee that much, I think. I think they've got a good shot against anybody in a championship series format. Got to get there first. Florida State and North Carolina, both real good teams. I think Florida State is probably who you don't want to see, because I think their offense is close to Tennessee's, and I think you saw that in the first game, what they can do. But, you know, either way, they're going to face a good team tomorrow, and you know, it's important to get through that and not have to face an elimination game. But if they're able to do it, they're in great shape.
Understand, I'm getting ahead of myself. UT fans probably pissed at the question, but if they win this thing, what does it do for Tony Vitello in terms of status, in terms of his place in the national order of things, and even in the state with Tim Corbin so respected and already having that notch on his belt?
Yeah, I think that's for us where we are. What makes this even more interesting is the fact that you have Vanderbilt that's been up here and done well in this tournament up until pretty recently. And you know, what Tennessee has done the last few years has been pretty remarkable, considering where that program had been for a long time baseball wise. And I still think there is a sense among some of the people who are here every year and deep into this sport that, you know, Tennessee is very much new money when it comes to this. They're, you know, I think if they go win a national championship, but Tony Vitello goes and wins a national championship, I feel like I do think it'll change a lot about how Tennessee is perceived as kind of that up-and-coming, upstart program. They would then be truly one of the elite programs, and I think Tony Vitello would be one of the elite coaches. And I think he's earned that to an extent over the last few years, but what it always kind of held everything back was how they'd performed when it mattered most. Up until this year, he was 1-4 in Omaha. You know, Tennessee is probably his best team was the 22 team that didn't even get to Omaha and blew it in the Super Regional. So there's a certain level of respect in this sport that comes with performing on the biggest stage here. And, you know, I think Vanderbilt certainly did a good job of that over the years. If you look at Tim Corbin's record at College World Series, he's done pretty well. You know, in a tournament where it's very difficult to do real well. But, you know, this Tennessee team's different. It's funny, when everyone looks at them, I think in a lot of ways they still see that 22 team. You know, a columnist friend of mine wrote this, you know, the barbarians at the gate, that kind of thing, you know, for the sport. And this team really isn't like that. I don't think that the 24 team has that same kind of in-your-face mentality that the 22 team did, but a lot of people still look at Tennessee and Tony Vitello and still see it that way.
Well, Gentry, it's been a lot of fun to watch. Looking forward to the game coming up tomorrow. Enjoy the great state of Nebraska, and we'll talk to you soon.
You bet. Take care, guys.
Get that laundry done.
That's right. Get the laundry done. No doubt about it. Gentry Estes from the Tennessean, our guest. You ever been to Lincoln? Ever been to the state of Nebraska?
I have been to Omaha.
Okay.
And, of course, the thing that would take me to Omaha is a Springsteen show.
Of course it is.
So in and out of Omaha, walked around, had a nice lunch, went to a show, got the hell out.
That's generally how you should handle Nebraska.
It was fine.
That's good. That's good.
I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing some things in and around Nebraska, but I wouldn't like to drive there.
No. Probably getting some traffic jams on the way there, too. One or two. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Coming up next, we'll get PK's thoughts on the Trevor Lawrence contract that was history-making in its own right. Lots of money for Trevor Lawrence. That's coming up next. Take your thoughts as well, 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. I got some tickets to give away. A 4-pack of tickets to see Monster Jam coming up at Nissan Stadium. Be caller 5-615-737-1025. Appreciate Gentry Estes from the Tennessean for being with us in the last segment. Paul Kuharsky with us from paulkuharsky.com. He'll be with me tomorrow on the show as well. So looking forward to that. PK, Trevor Lawrence, a big contract late last week. $275 million on a 5-year deal. 142 fully guaranteed, close to $200 million in total guarantees. And if you care about the annual average value, $55 million per year. So pretty similar to the Joe Burrow contract. Lots of reaction to the Trevor Lawrence deal. Some people stunned that he got paid that much money based on his achievement level to this point. And then others look at it and say, well, that's the quarterback market. And that's what the market dictates quarterback is paid if you're going to sign him to a new deal at this point. How do you view the Trevor Lawrence contract and where the quarterback market in the National Football League currently stands?
Yeah, I tend to be in camp B. I mean, he's not a passer who's made a lot of explosive plays downfield. Slightly above average. He limits sacks. 5.1% sack rate, 7th lowest per CBS. During his two seasons of good coaching, 46 touchdowns, which you love, 22 picks, which is too many.
Yep.
But here are the guys who've taken turns, setting Mahomes aside, all right? Here are the guys who've taken turns as the highest paid quarterback in the league lately. Watson, Murray, Hurts, Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert, and Joe Burrow. How many of those guys do you say should qualify as highest paid? I mean, Watson was very intriguing. Murray, no way.
Nope.
Hurts, no way. Lamar, yeah.
Burrow, yep.
Herbert, I'm big on, but he's, you know,
from
you wouldn't say
no.
Should yeah. be the highest paid. Burrow, yes. It just cycles. Lamar and Burrow already look like reasonable deals. So it doesn't take long to get there. And Lamar and Burrow have been passed by Herbert, Goff, and Lawrence.
Yep.
Right? And pretty soon, Trevor Lawrence is probably going to be passed by Love, Tua, and Dak.
Yep.
Now, are Love, Tua, and Dak going to... You know, you got to get away from this idea where you think the highest paid guy is the best guy, because Love isn't the best guy.
No.
He's promising, good. You know him better than anybody in town. Tua is another one of these guys that's on the fence. Like, he's got moments where he's terrific and he's got moments where he's not. And he stayed injury free last year, but you still worry about him on that front. Dak is the definition of average and playoff unsuccessful, right? But what happens is you get one of these guys who you can win to a certain degree with, and you say, you and I are sitting down in our boardroom and we're saying, do we want this guy who we know, who we think can get better, who we've won to a reasonably satisfying degree with, or do we want to start from zero with the unknown? And you and I in the boardroom say, yes, we want the known. The fans out there say, we want Mahomes. Now, who has surfaced that is Mahomes since Mahomes?
Nobody.
Nobody, right? I mean, you take Burrow, right? I'd take Burrow I'm still very intrigued by Herbert with a new coach, but who else is, you know, Lamar, you know, some of these guys on this list.
But even
list,
he's got playoff questions, right?
Yep. Yeah, but some of these guys, I don't like them, but some of these guys on this list are the next best quarterbacks in the league. So this idea that fans have where they want to flush guys because they haven't won in the playoffs or whatever, you've got to ride it out with some of those guys and hope that things take off. Now, some of them I really don't like. I just don't think Dak Prescott's ever going to take you anywhere. And I would – now, somebody's going to want him at a price.
And he might get paid $60 million
plus. Somebody's been in quarterback hell for a long time, and they say, my God, we could go to the playoffs on a regular basis with Dak Prescott. Yep. We'll take him. But is that good enough for the Cowboys' alleged standard for how long they've not gone to the playoffs? I think Dallas would be better off restarting because they've topped out with him. You know, and this Lawrence contract, they could get out in 2008 with 42.5 in dead money and 4.5 saved. Well, in 2028, 42.5 dead money is not going to be that much anymore with the rate the cap's going. In 2029, it's a 5-year $202 million deal with zero debt. I mean, it seems outrageous now, but just based on all this context, if you wait a year, you're going to say it's very palatable.
Well, and by the time,
based on the cap going up and all of that.
Well, we talked about Levis. Like, let's say Levis works out best case scenario, and in a couple of years, it's his time to get paid. Well, he's going to make $60+ million per year, right? Like, that's where quarterback is going right now. I think a couple things can be true here. I am totally with you in terms of, like, Jacksonville had to do this. They you can't get back into quarterback purgatory, and Lawrence has not lived up to what he was drafted to be to this point, but he's shown that he can be a good player. I also think if you're a Titans fan, like you see this deal, and I'm not saying you're celebrating in the street, but like Trevor, if I'm a Titans fan, I'm not shaking in my boots about Trevor Lawrence being the quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars either. Could he turn out to be a great player? Yeah. I mean, the thing that continues to blow my mind in this discussion is he is younger than Will Levis by a few months, but he's younger than Levis.
That's pretty crazy. Here's my thing. As we list these guys like who've been the highest paid guy in a while, do you still feel good about their potential to get better?
Right.
I do with Lawrence. I don't know if that's unreasonable, if that's just me. I feel like Trevor Lawrence still, on a good game, you look at him and say, that guy can be pretty damn good. All right? Watson, I don't think that. Murray, I don't think that.
Yep.
Hurts, I think, has been kind of exposed. Right? Lamar, pretty damn good, but still, I think, limited in some fashion, right? Herbert, I'm big on. Burrow, I have no question about.
No.
But that's 7 guys we're talking about. I'm only really big on 3 of them. And Lawrence is the third of the three. Now, I shouldn't say really big. I'm really big on Burrow. I like Herbert a lot. And my next one would be Lawrence. So I feel a lot better about that than I do about Hurts, Murray, or Watson.
I would agree with that. I think the Lawrence part of this is interesting from the standpoint of it was such a disaster his first year. And I know some people don't want to hear that because it sounds like excuse making. But Urban Meyer was an absolute train wreck. Like, it was a disaster his first year. Second year showed signs of life. Now, as somebody has pointed out, and it's a fair point to bring up, Chip on the text line says, I'm going to text this every time you guys talk about Lawrence. Everything he quote-unquote achieved in his second year was based on the collapse of the Titans in the regular season and the Chargers in the playoffs. So there was some luck involved. Like, the Titans had an epic choke job down the second half of that season that allowed them to get in. But he did play very well in the second half of that season. He did have a horrible first half in the playoff game and then came back and looked great in the second half of the playoff game, got the win. And then for the first half of last year, he was pretty good. And then the injuries started to creep in. So there's, albeit a limited body, a body of work of him playing good football in the league.
Injury avoidance is a quarterback skill.
It is.
I believe. That's a skill he needs to develop along with his other stuff. I don't know if they've surrounded him well enough. Like the Ridley for Gabe Davis is not a good trade. So his weapons are trending down in my eyes, and I think in the eyes of everybody. Defense can be pretty good there. Up front, they are, you know, are they going to get him the ball back in a good situation? Are they going to prevent points to a good degree? I think they've got some promise there. But there's something about him I like, and he's one of those guys, and I don't like to play this game. You know, I don't like to play this game. We played it with Corey Davis. You know, they said if he wasn't, what, sixth, you know, and he was 36th. Well, he wasn't 36th.
Right.
But even at 36th, Corey Davis wasn't good. But, I mean, I think if Trevor Lawrence wasn't number one and projected as a, like, generational prospect, if he was drafted 15th, you'd be happy,
yep.
I think. Now, so all of those things are not his fault, per se. It's his fault that he hasn't lived up to the billing, sure. But that doesn't mean you toss him in the garbage can.
He's been good. He's not been great.
Right.
That's what it is.
He's been good. He's not been great. You can win with him. And he still, in my eyes, can get better. Injury avoidance, one. Peterson continuing to help develop him and develop that team. I like Peterson. I think he's in a good situation. You look at some of these other guys. Is Murray in a good situation? No. Nope. Watson, you know, has created a terrible situation for himself. And his team's good despite that.
Yeah.
Hurts, things have gotten messy in Philadelphia. This is a save season or Sirianni's out.
Yep.
And they seem pretty ready. I mean, Sirianni's a puppet right now. They hired his coaches all around him. The Eagles have gone from very good to very messy in a hurry.
Is A.J. Brown ruining the locker room up there?
Not helping it, right? There's a lot going on there. You know, Lamar, when you signed Derrick Henry, you're not saying we're relying more on Lamar. You're saying we're relying less on Lamar. Now, less Lamar could be good for Lamar.
Yeah.
But you don't know. Herbert, I think, has a chance to be on the upswing here because he's got a great coaching improvement. And Burrow, you know, could be hurt a little bit by the loss of Callahan. He's in the last year of T. Higgins. This is a big year for the Bengals.
We'll get PK's thoughts on Trevor Lawrence's contract, more details on that, and the rest of the AFC South, how he feels about the quarterback position moving forward as well. Your thoughts as well, 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Paul Kuharski from paulkuharski.com is with us discussing all things Titans and the AFC South as well. Getting a little bit deeper into the Trevor Lawrence deal, a massive contract, 5 years, $275 million. PK, we were just looking through 2022. He had about a six-game stretch in the middle of that season where he was playing just about as well as anybody in the league, which is where the hope lies from Jacksonville giving him this.
So you and I are back in this boardroom deciding what we're doing. And we look at this six-game stretch. 14 touchdowns, one interception, 111 rating, took 12 sacks. 7.53 yards gained per pass attempt. You know, ran for a touchdown. He fumbled, lost three fumbles. Now that's a problem that he has. But you look at that six games and you say, well, how do we give up on that guy?
Yeah.
You know, that's him at his best. Now maybe they go look at his worst six-game streak, too. But this is a good stretch here. They went 4-2 in those games. The Raiders. They lost at Kansas City. They beat Baltimore in a 28-27 game where he threw three touchdowns, no interceptions, rated 130. Lost to Detroit, beat the Titans. Another three touchdowns, beat Dallas, four touchdowns. I mean, it's hard to look at a stretch like that And it's not like he was bad in the final three games either. So that's a half season where you say, that's our guy.
Yeah. That's what it is, right? And even at the first part of last
year. That whole season is pretty good.
Right. Like, even, you know, the first part of last year, before the injuries started to creep in, you know, he wasn't playing great. But what were they to begin the season? I mean, they started out 1-2, and then they went on a stretch where they won 5 in a row. So, they, you know, by the time that game, they went across the pond, played Buffalo, beat Indy the following week, beat New Orleans, and they were sitting pretty in terms of making the playoffs. And then the last part of the season, it fell apart. But even, you know, they destroyed the Titans last year at home 34-14. I mean, they were still playing really well. And then, as we talked about earlier, the injuries started to creep in, and he just didn't play very well down the stretch. So, like, if you're Jacksonville, I don't think it's a tough decision. Like, Jacksonville making this decision to sign him to the contract, if it works out for you and he plays well, then the contract's going to look fine this time a year from now. It's somewhat of a calculated risk, but he's 24 years old, and I think he's shown enough good football, not consistently enough, and that's the next step for him, but he's shown enough good football where I think it's a solid move for Jacksonville. What's interesting about it to me is he's the first wave in the division of guys getting that next deal. Obviously, he's been here the longest. But you got Stroud, Richardson, Levis all in the same class. Levis is older than Trevor Lawrence is by a few months. This division, in terms of just the quarterback position itself, one of the more intriguing divisions, in my opinion, in the league, based on the youth of everybody involved and how different things could go based on the success or failure rate of these quarterbacks in this division.
Yeah, just for a second on the quarterback prices. Outside of Cousins, who did a lot of year-to-year, who – and teams didn't walk away from him.
Yep.
I mean, Washington ultimately let him go. But who walks away from the quarterback, the caliber of Trevor Lawrence – or these other, you know, or Kyler Murray or Jalen Hurts?
It doesn't happen very often. Like, I would say this, like, Tannehill put up comparable numbers in Miami. Now, Tannehill also had injury problems he was dealing with, and by the end of that, they were willing to move on, and the injuries were a big part of it. Now, Tannehill did have some comparable numbers to Lawrence, and yeah, Miami moved on from him.
Yeah, that's a good example. And I think he's a relative outlier. And now Tannehill, you know, the Titans moved on because he's old,
yeah,
and slowing down.
Yeah.
So, you know, at that stage, it's a different thing. But generally what we're saying is if you have that, you keep it. If you have something even less than Trevor Lawrence, you keep it. And you pay the going rate. You pay the going rate. Now, I've made this case before, like, In a Tua situation, who I think is less bankable than Lawrence, to me, there, and I think this is a bad thing for the league, there is no middle path with the quarterback. It's all or nothing, price wise.
Yep.
And it's dictated by the franchise tag, right? So a guy is getting at least the franchise tag and the franchise tag plus 20%, I think it is, the second year, right? So it starts with that, and those are huge numbers.
Yeah.
So he's getting 2 years at those two numbers minimally, and usually 3 years. So extrapolating out that third year, that's the minimal thing he's getting. There's no middle ground. There's no, like, middle quarterback where you say, well, I like him, but I don't love him, and here's what we'll offer you. And he'll say, well, no, I'll go if you let me go to the market. Somebody needs a quarterback like me because they're in dire trouble at quarterback. So there's no middle range for a quarterback that has any level of success.
Corey Curtis brought up Derek Carr in Vegas.
That's a good one.
As a good one. Now, the difference there would be Carr was there for 9 seasons.
And so, had multiple regime changes.
And had multiple regime changes. Did have some injury issues that he dealt with, but 9 seasons. Now, his numbers throughout that were good. Not great, but good. But, you know, Lawrence has been there 3 years, so it's different, yeah, just from a timeline standpoint.
Well, Carr got a second contract and, yeah, maybe a third contract. But that's a very good example. But, again, outlier, right?
Yeah.
So we've got Carr, and Tannehill.
Well, and then the question of the division part of this, I mean, we still – everybody thinks they know about Stroud, and I feel good about Stroud, but I don't know yet, right? I need to see it another year. Levis Richardson, have no idea. Like, I have no idea if Levis or Richardson are going to hit. But if they do, I mean, this has a chance to be a division where this time 10 years from now, we could still be talking about the same quarterbacks. That doesn't happen very often in the NFL. And is the likelihood that it's going to happen here? Probably not. But – That's part of what makes it so intriguing to me is this is such a young division at the quarterback position, and it could go a lot of different ways. But if it does work out for all these teams, it's going to be a fun division for a long time.
Yeah, probably at least one of them doesn't pan out.
That would be my guess.
Now, I think people automatically presume Stroud will. It's possible, though, that a guy takes off like a rocket ship and fades. I think unlikely, based on what he showed in the first year. But, you know, we've seen some guys, Kyler Murray, you know, is an example, look pretty damn good and then not. Jalen Hurts, I think, has been figured out to a degree.
Yep.
So, you know, you don't know exactly what will happen there. But I'd say the odds on him are low. So it's Levis or Richardson because – Lawrence has achieved a degree of success already.
Got a texter that says, would you rather pay Trevor Lawrence or Jordan Love? How do you view that one?
Lawrence has done it longer.
Love's 6 to 7 game stretch to close out last year was at a higher level than anything we've seen from Lawrence. It's just a very limited sample size.
Yeah, I haven't seen as much Love as you've seen, being a Packers fan and watching them weekly. I would lean Lawrence, but, you know, with that caveat and, you know, check back in a year.
I think it's really close. And Tua's an interesting one too. Like Tua, there's been a lot of good performances from him. He's not come through in the playoffs when they need him the most, and I don't think he's an elite player. But if it's not going to be Tua, who's Miami turning to?
Quarterback? And they're so stacked with weaponry. In a way, all you need is a facilitator. Sounds kind of crazy that you could be that good.
Yeah.
But with their skill position guys, don't mess it. You know, be efficient. Get the ball in their hands, and watch them run. And he can do that. You know, but does it make him a guy worth $200 million? You know, in that situation, I wonder if you could say, well, we could find another guy who could do that at rookie prices that enables us to continue to pay all of these weapons. Yep. That'll be a great test case for me.
Yep.
But I suspect he gets his money. Now, on the Lawrence versus Love question, part of that to me would be, who do you like better offensively, Peterson or LaFleur?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good – it's a big part of it. And I think
– And who do you like better offensively?
It's pretty close.
I think it is too.
I would probably lean Peterson. That's just me. But it's pretty close. I just think there's a sticker shock going on at quarterback right now that people are having a tough time getting over. Without realizing, like, the cap is going to be astronomical as it continues to grow here. And in 2 years, $55 million for a quarterback is really not going to be breaking the bank. It just seems like that is the case now, based on the numbers that we've known. I remember, like, it wasn't that long ago when Matthew Stafford got $40 million a year, and people were like, oh, my God, they're paying a quarterback $40 million per year.
I remember when $20 million a year was a ridiculous benchmark.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to grow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like.
Unless you're a running back.
One of the big benchmarks. But I mean, the cap, the TV contracts, just all of it. There's no end in sight, really. I saw some number on the contract for 5 Christmas Day games.
Yeah. It's absurd.
is just outrageous.
615-737-1025. One more segment with Paul Kuharsky coming up next. Take more of your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Final segment of the day, Robbie and Rex Road. Paul Kuharsky from PaulKuharsky.com with us both today and tomorrow here on the program.
And happy to be here. This from Aaron Schatz. Used to be with Football Outsiders. And now I believe just kind of everywhere. In week two of 1995, the Oilers had 11 straight goal-to-go plays against the Steelers. Incomplete, 3-yard scramble, defensive holding for a new first. 1-yard run, offsides, replay second down. 0-yard run, defensive pass interference for a new first down. 0-yard sneak, 0-yard run, 1-yard bootleg touchdown. How fun would that have been?
A lot of effort, baby. Get it in there.
Red zone, baby.
The red zone. Got to be good.
Red zone goal line. No Derrick Henry in that game. And no Earl Campbell either. They were between.
Yes.
No Eddie George yet.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. How about this from Trevor on the text line? If Levis does really well this season and the Titans can identify that he is the guy, would it be financially beneficial for them to try to get a deal done with him earlier rather than later to save a little bit of money?
Can't do it. Well, yeah, you can, right? 3 years?
I think 3 years, yeah. I think.
Yeah, you can do it. You can do it after 3 years. I mean, conceivably, you wait until after four and he's, you know, a free agent. So,
but that's the Titans would love to have that problem, right? Like if Levis is going to cost you $60+ million, that means he's pretty good. So yes. the Titans will be more than happy to pay that when the time comes if he's good.
Yeah. And, you know, with your franchise quarterback, even if you waited until after four, no, this is just going to be his second year. They cannot resign.
Not after this year.
After this year. So you would love to be in position after his third year to be signing him long term, where that fourth year would still be largely inexpensive for a starting quarterback.
Yeah, exactly. But again, like if you're the Titans and the time comes where you're feeling really good about handing him a big contract, you'd sign up for that right now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you want that
you want
to
that.
Happen.
Yeah, and then you manage the roster and the cap and everything else after that. But, you know, having one of these relatively high-picked quarterbacks make it to a second deal would be great. Titans are
good
for that.
Yeah, look, everybody talks about how great it is to have a quarterback on a rookie deal.
Right.
Which is great. But would you rather have that or would you rather have Mahomes?
Exactly.
Or Burrow?
Yeah.
You'd rather have Mahomes or Burrow, and then you work the contract stuff the way you work the contract stuff.
Exactly.
Who are the teams that are winning Super Bowls with quarterbacks on rookie deals?
Seattle did it with Russell Wilson, but it's hard to come by.
That's already a long time ago.
Exactly. And, you know, Houston's trying. Clearly, they're loading up with Stroud this year. But to your point, you know, Mahomes, I think, did win one before he got the big deal at the end of it. But he's winning them left and right now.
Generally speaking, your path to a Super Bowl win is going to be with a quarterback who's on his second contract.
Stafford is
getting
a lot of money.
And that second contract is going to be a good chunk of your salary.
Yeah, so you'd sign up for that right now if you're the Titans. Like, the Levis part of this, one thing that is intriguing, like if he is good this year, to your point, you can't sign him to another deal after this, but I think you would be even more all in next offseason of, well, before you do get to that deal and you're paying him that next money, continue to load the roster up and go forward around it, which that would be what you want. Like if you felt good about that after this season, regardless of if you made the playoffs or not, to me that's a good year for the Titans.
Yeah, and you could plan your cap then,
yeah,
like you're saying. In 2025 and a go for it thing, and planning ahead in 2026. All right, we know what his likely cap number would be in the first year of an extension. And then knowing the first year of the stadium, 2027, would be the first really big hit of him and what it would take from there.
Yeah, that's to me, if that's what the conclusion you come to at the end of the year, that you feel great about him moving forward, that's a successful season. Like that, to me, that's so much what this season is about, is just purely him, regardless of the win total and the playoffs and all
if
that.
If you could get a positive verdict on him, then the record, the playoffs, all of that stuff matters a lot less. But if you're getting a positive verdict on him, chances are the record's pretty decent. Good.
Yep.
A lot of it depends on what other people are doing.
It does. And, you know, injury luck and all those things too. But that if he plays well enough this season where you're feeling good about him long term, then you should be in contention for a playoff spot. Like, I think they've done enough with their roster. And we saw it last year with Houston, right? Like, it doesn't take long in this league to go from bad to good. Now, it's hard to get to elite, but to turn things around in this league these days, especially with the work they did in the offseason, it doesn't take that long.
Also, since they've expanded the playoffs, it's been proven that six was the right
number. Six was the right number.
Because that seventh team is not very good.
No.
There's a difference. From six to seven, there is a gap.
Yep.
And it's a mistake. The expansion was now they don't care. The money, the extra game, all of that stuff. They're perfectly happy with it, the one team bye and all of that.
And there's eventually going to be a seven that makes some noise and goes on a little bit of a run in the playoffs. But to your point, it has not happened.
We've seen no hint of it so far. And so if Levis is good and the Titans have a good season, I know some people are thinking they go out and win the division.
Right.
I would think, you know, a best case scenario for this team might be contending for a wild card, and that would probably be that seventh spot.
Yep.
And you get in and you see what happens.
PK?
There will be people who will say, no, don't get the seventh spot. Get a better draft pick.
Why do we watch sports?
Yeah.
Play the game. Play the game. Enjoy the games.
I look forward to rejoining you tomorrow. I urge people in the meantime, don't block the box and be sure to lock your locks.
PK, we'll be back tomorrow on the program. That does it for us today. Chase and Big Joe coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.